Welcome to the Common Sense Mentoring Classic Series. In this classic audio presentation, you'll discover why some principles of success are truly timeless and have empowered countless independent business owners, just like you, to live life in balance.
I want to just real quickly introduce you to the freshman chick I met when I was a senior. And to just give you a little background on how we met, it was a blind date. I showed up, let's call it like inebriated. I had no shoes on, had white socks, white pants, a white shirt, and a fire engine red sweater. Came in, met the sweetest, most gorgeous, most wonderful lady. Obviously, she was very nearsighted. To be very candid, the best thing that's ever happened in my life. Debbie? Oh,
thank you, honey. Nearsighted? That's a good one. That'll teach me to be vain and leave my eyeglasses in the dorm room. That's a classic definition of a blind date. Just thought of that. But that's right, we have been together for a lot of years, and that's a lot of decades, actually. We've been together for a lot of decades. And I can tell each and every one of you, almost every one of those years was really excited because we were busy chasing a dream. But just a few years ago, and I'm warning you, I'm afraid this is going to be a theme tonight, but we were with a company that let us down. And this part isn't funny. I watched Tyler lose belief in the business and just everything in our lives, and discouragement set in. And I guess the only thing worse than that was seeing a lot of our good friends, and many of them are out there tonight, and I saw the same things happening to you guys. And we'd fallen in love with so many people over the years, and then to have this happen. The good thing is that the Blue Ocean Business Group came along, and it's been a godsend, and I look forward to a lot of good times with all of you, honey.
Thank you, Deb. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to talk about, I'm not sure what I'm going to talk about. A few nights ago, I put together a bunch of notes, and I looked at them last night, and I estimated conservatively it was about 6 hours of talking there. And I said, what's the contract say here if we run, you know, until 4 a.m. or something? So it's a really discombobulated talk, to be very, very candid. I just want you to know that you have the knowledge after this weekend. You have the knowledge, you know what to do, you know how to do it, and all of that. After hearing Whitney talk up here, I love that talk. And when he talks about what depth will do and the power of depth and all of that, that depth is the answer. I just want you to reflect here for a second. If it, in fact, depth is the answer, if in fact it does solve all problems, and it does, if in fact depth will give you unlimited income potential, it'll allow you to get residual income to a point where you can be financially free, which opens up that ultimate door which can lead to anything you want it to be in life. If in fact depth is relatively easy to do, then why don't we just all go do it? Think about that question, okay? And I'm going to try to answer that as I go through tonight. That's what I'm here to agitate you, I think. I want you to think about it. Why don't we all do it? And the answer, I think, is quite simple. I think it because if when you're out there actively building depth, you're in a constant state, are you not, of mild discomfiture? And it's too easy just to roll the punches and not fight back, if you will. It's too easy to go out and show the plan. Now, you get in the habit of showing the plan every night, and it becomes really, really fun. But what's a little bit awkward, that awkward spot is at the end of the plan when you have to book the next whatever, the follow-up, the follow-through. And it's so easy just to go on our merry way and go home and not do the critical little points that move us down the road and effectively get us building depth. And so I want to try to explore maybe why some of that doesn't get done. The point of the talk was made most powerfully, I think, by a blind, deaf, and dumb girl. This blind, deaf, and dumb girl. And I want you to picture yourself being blind, deaf, and dumb, where the only communications that you have, okay, the only communication you have the outside world is what? With touch? And for Helen Keller to come up with this quote and say that life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. Think about that. Okay, life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. So if that's true, how do we explain what we do and the ruts we get into? Okay, one day, all of us the same. One day we're kids with these great dreams in life. Next day, we're living that life that Thoreau called quiet desperation. My brother Gary gave me an ad years ago. I still carry it. Not with me everywhere, but it's always in my desk. It's an Arizona State advertisement. And what it says here, it shows a picture of a little kid over here with a cowboy hat going Yahoo. And then it shows him growing up over here with leading a string of horses up through the mountains in Arizona. And the caption is, "Admit it, you didn't grow up longing to be a systems analyst." It sort of says it all, doesn't it, in a way? Because, you know, as a kid, the life that Gary, I think you all know Gary is my brother, Gary and I had growing up was sort of like the life here. We grew up in the wilderness with a family that was, it was just an exciting, it was a daring adventure. I'll tell you, as an 11-year-old, I loved life more than you can imagine. And somehow I went from there to getting a government job, going to work every day, working for the government. I know, oxymoronic, okay, jumbo shrimp and all that. But going to working for the government, sitting in a corner office because I was the boss. I could still remember sitting in the corner office, drinking coffee, watching the traffic go up and down Western Avenue. Okay? And I remember thinking this thought. I wish I was with them. I didn't care if they were going to the dump. I didn't care if they were going fishing. I just didn't want to be sitting in this chair on the fourth floor of the federal building, okay? Government workers, look, I'm not putting government workers down. If you're a federal worker right now, you make a whole lot more money, significantly more money than your counterparts in the private sector. But the problem is there's nothing worse than a soft job. When I worked for the government, they allowed us to do stuff that in the private sector you needed license to do. But as a government worker, you could do it, no problem. So they paid you a lot of money, and all you had to do most of the time was drink coffee. And I like coffee. But the point is, you had to be there every day, especially if you were the boss, to make sure everybody else was drinking their coffee. And so the problem becomes, you see, it's pretty darn gone hard to have a daring adventure on the fourth floor of the federal building in Augusta, Maine. Okay. I often think back that maybe we could have made it more fun or a daring adventure. Maybe we could have rappelled down the outside of the building, right? And then to add insult to injury, I'd go home at night and I'd watch other people live life on TV. Everything I wanted to do in life, I watched them do. And I'm here tonight. I'm just telling you, watching other people catch fish, watching other people kill elk, watching other people travel the world, play ball, and go capture the blonde is not as much fun as doing it yourself. Huh? I've said this often, but you notice the one thing you never see people on TV doing, the one thing they never have time to do is what? Watch TV. And yet that's what I caught myself doing. And anyway, all I want you to do is reflect on how do we, and I'm not saying you, I've gotten myself into a rut. Debbie, we just came out of another one. How do we get ourselves in Rutville? How do we get ourselves there? And I don't know the answer to that. I think we just get busy. I don't know. I know that our dream fades, and I know without a dream, you lose faith. You can't have faith if you don't have a dream. Is that true or not? Without something to hope for, without something to look forward to, right? Without some desire in your future, there's no hope. Hope is adolescent faith, and without adolescent faith, there is no faith. All right? I don't even know if that made sense. I understood it perfectly. What do we become, though? People, if you're a man without faith, and I'm not talking about, that's not a spiritual thing necessarily. You can have faith in about anything. You can have faith in, we were up in Alaska fishing not too long ago. People have used to have, or maybe still do have faith in these totem poles, poles. You need faith in something. You need faith in the future, or it isn't worth going there. I read this in a Western not long ago. It was talking about people like that, slugs I call them, but slugs like that, all right, it said in there they're nothing more than a shiver looking for a spine to go up. Isn't that descriptive? Earl Nightingale said this. He described it this way. He says, most of us tiptoe through life only to safely arrive at death. I'm getting you really lifted up, aren't I? The first few minutes of my talk are not intended to be great lifting up things. But they are, in a sense, because you know the great news, the most powerful news is that a dream is a choice. We get to make it, okay? I had a chronic cough, and this cough kept waking me up every night. And so I started thinking about this, and I'd wake up, and I would make note of what I was dreaming about. And so what I would do, because you, Norman Vincent Peale said it this way. He said, if you can worry, you can dream. Worry is what? Just a negative or a nightmare? It's just the opposite of a positive dream. So I started keeping track. And I was really proud of the fact that 90% of my dreams are really positive. Okay? 10% got a little weird there. Okay? But one thing I noticed is almost all of them, not quite 100%, but almost all of them related to something that happened to me that day. Something I read or something I watched or something I prayed about. So the point is, okay, you could go out and build your own dream. You can build your dream on purpose. And that's what I want to convince you to do. I want you to select and watch out, watch what you watch, watch what you read, watch what you do. When I say watch out what you watch, watch the Travel Channel for Pete's sake. I don't personally go to a Stephen King. I got enough fear in me. I don't need any more of it. Right? So I try to guard what goes into my head. I try to make sure those things are positive. The books I read are all positive books. If it's a Western, the good guy wins. He goes riding over the horizon with the blonde. Every time. Bad guy's dead in a pool of blood, man. Right? The books, I watch what I read. I want to get excited about life. One of my goals is to motorcycle all the way around the world. I read books by people who are doing that or have just done that, okay? I do things, and I want you to do these things in your life. I have a float plane. I got the greatest float plane on Earth. I can be off the water in 6 seconds. But you know, it's a small float plane. I go to some place like a fixed base operator at an airport and look at a caravan on floats, 3,600-pound payload, jet engine on the front. You go to bed that night, what are you going to think about? If I take you, you're going to be dreaming about a caravan on floats. So watch what we do. Feed your head the right stuff. I don't want to get into this too heavily, but if you've heard if the dream is big enough, the what? Facts don't count. Is that true? It is. If I convince you somehow that your family was going to die, if you didn't go do 1,000 plans next month, how many plans would you do next month? 1,000, and yet we recognize and congratulate you if you go do 15. If the dream is big enough, the facts don't count. So I'm telling you, get yourself a big dream, okay? My dream at 29 years of age was a simple dream. My dream was to get out of the federal building in Augusta, Maine. My dream was freedom, and I had a slogan back then, free at 33. That's all I could think of. I didn't have, as John Sims talked about, the refrigerator with the coaches. And I wish I had all that cool stuff. I'd have gotten that stuff. I had one thing on my refrigerator. I wanted to tell my boss things, right? Interesting things, okay? And I'll tell you, to this day, the sweetest day of my life, the sweetest day of my life was 3 days before my 34th birthday, was to retire at the ripe old age of 33. I dressed up in a tuxedo. I went to my office in the corner of the fourth floor, the federal building in Augusta, Maine. I looked out at that same Western Avenue and looked at the traffic going up and down Western Avenue. And I looked out there and I saw a caravan of 50-some Fleetwood Brougham Cadillacs coming to pick me up my last day at work, led by a limo that was going to take me and led by, of course, cops and all of that kind of stuff as well. what we had that day going on. We had skydivers diving out over the city. We had balloons going up to meet them. Every marquee in town. Congratulations, Tyler, free at 33. Somebody bought up all the radio ad time. That's all it was all day long. Congratulations, Tyler, free at 33. Here's only one radio. Okay? Only one radio station, rather. We took that caravan up the Civic Center, Augusta Civic Center, had a freedom rally. In my little book of magic things over here, I still have the news, the news release from that day. 34-year-old Libby, who has been with the Soil Conservation Service since 1966, will quit federal service. Libby says he's enjoyed working with the Kennebec County landowners, but never really got used to having a job. The Aroostook native says he leaves federal service with mixed emotions, joy and happiness. This little book that I read about, this is a leather-bound book. It's my life. It's everything. In the front of it, it's got all the memories, all of those moments in time, all of the stuff that I want to remember. In the back of it, I've got the things I want to do in life. I think every one of us should have something like this. And I open this sucker up. Like, here's one. Here's something I don't recommend you do. But I got a kick out of this, okay? When you're a captive of the fourth floor of the federal building, this is a cool thing to do. I wanted to be able to just pick places with weird names and then go there. The funniest ones are X-rated. They honest to God are. I can't read them from up here. If you want to know about them, you grab me by the arm somewhere. I'll tell you some that'll make you blush, okay? But I've been to places like Sweet Lips Community or the Toad Suck Fairy Lock and Dam. I've been to churches like the Only Baptist Church. Been to the Halfway Baptist Church. I've been to the Knob Lick Union Church. How about the Hooker Methodist Church? The Intercourse United Methodist Church. My favorite one, though, is the Blue Ball Church of the Brethren. You say, yeah, going to Booger Bottom, Georgia is not very important. No, it isn't. But for somebody who's stranded in the fourth floor of the federal building, that's exactly what's important. There's so many things I could talk about. I got lists here, okay? I'm not going to get into all of them. There's so many magic moments that I've had. Just the fact that when I retired, I took naps. Naps were a religious thing for me. I had a nap every day. I still do. I even got a period of time I would set the alarm so I could get up early enough so I could fit in a morning nap, not just to have an afternoon nap. To this day, I still carry too much cash in my pocket. I was tired of going around broke. People say, oh, yeah, you know, you can't buy love with money. Take your wife to the Virgin Islands. You give her $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 in cash. Say, spend it, honey, if you can, and you'll find that adage sucks. Okay? Little things, little magic moments that are hard to, that they just never would have happened on the fourth floor of the federal building. I took my wife over to Europe to go antiquing. We were in Nottingham, and we had a daughter that was studying at the University of Boston University in Kensington, downtown London. I said, let's go in and see her. We couldn't get her on the phone. She didn't answer the phone, so we went down to the campus. There is no campus. It's spread all over London. We went to her dorm. She wasn't in her dorm. We went to her classroom. She wasn't in any of her classrooms. It was a hot day. I was really, how do you say it, pissed off. And I'm sitting here saying, we rented a car, we drove into London to see my daughter, and we can't find her. And finally, out of desperation, standing on some street in Kensington, London, I hollered, Sarah! As loud as I could, and we hear this, Dad! There's a magic moment you're never going to forget, guys. To be able to go around the world, just say we're going to go all the way around, head west until we get home. Went out there, Richard Morgan, Richard Marilyn here, we met them in Hong Kong. We just had a spectacular around the world. We've been on the exotic hunts, whether it's the Torn Gap Mountains, okay, or the Rockies, the exotic fishing trips, Cabo, Alaska, whatever. I remember one magic moment on a fishing trip I will never forget. We were up in Labrador. I'm half owner of supporting camps up in northern Labrador. And we were in Labrador. That's Canada, eh? Okay? And we were up, it was cold, midnight. I came in and I was crawled in bed. My son-in-law was with us. And he came in and he calls me Pops. He says, Pops, you got to come see this. And I said, leave me alone. He says, you got to come see this. I walked out on that porch, freezing my butt off. Look up, and the biggest moon I've ever seen in my entire life. You look in the south, and there's the sun still up at midnight. And you look right up overhead, and the northern lights are running wild. The most spectacular thing, or you could take it pictures. Disney couldn't make that thing up. It's so incredible. There's been times when, like Gary and I, we'll fly into a remote wilderness lake. My favorite of all. Google it, Lower Hudson, Northern Maine. Fly in between the mountains and land on a lake. Stay there until you pick a spot where you're going to build a cabin or two. And then decide you're going to stay there until the cabin's built. There's more experience. I can't even tell you what that's like. Or to be able to send your kids to the college of their choice. I'll tell you why that was a burning thing in my heart. My oldest daughter, we were not making enough money to send her anywhere except the University of Maine. Okay, my wife and I both went there. But we sent her there because we lived in Maine, we could afford it. Her friends were going to places like Harvard, but old dad could afford to send her to the University of Maine. Just because I wanted to feel good about myself, my manhood, I guess, we told the other two daughters, you can go anywhere you want. I don't recommend that. I think it's bad advice. They picked places like Oxford and Boston University, and Academy of the Arts in San Francisco, okay? All these different places, okay? To take your wife and say, honey, where would you like to live? We actually went out and looked at all 50 states plus the territories. I can still recreate the short list. Had places like San Diego on it. I say we looked at all 50 states. We really didn't look at Kansas, okay? But well, maybe we looked at Kansas from like 35,000 feet on our way to San Diego. But we considered all 50 states and then to pick where you want to live. To make a brag on a stage just like this one day. So I made the brag on stage. I said, next year I'm going to take a motorcycle coast to coast. I walked off stage and said, oh, crap, I've never sat on a motorcycle. Next spring came along. We were going to go across America. I had to fly to Texas to learn how to ride a motorcycle. I got my permit in Texas. We came back to New Hampshire. We took our motorcycles. First time I was on a motorcycle, we did 48 states, 40 days, 14,000 miles. We've done 10 major trips in 12 years. I'm just telling you, folks, in any of those trips, you'll get more memories than most people will get in a lifetime. In just one of those trips. I took Debbie across Northern Europe last fall. She said it's the last time she'll ever get on a motorcycle with me. It was cold. In Scotland, they called it blustery, 58 degrees rain, high winds. Okay. But we end up going to Normandy to stand there and look out at where my stepdad, he ran a 5-inch gun on a boat, and his captain ordered that boat on D-Day to run aground so that they would take the fire and not the men on the ground. Okay, to stand there and watch that, and then to go into St. Mary of Glace and remember the 13 or 14,000 paratroopers that dove over there because a friend of mine was one of those paratroopers, okay? Out of those 13,000 that dove out behind the enemy lines that day, 8,000 and some were missing, lost, or wounded or killed. And to be able to sit there and send a prayer up for them, yeah, a magic moment. And think both of those guys died still believing that freedom was worth fighting for. Most important is the friends you get. The Crawfords and Sims and Simmons and Quocks and Evans and Cabals. And, of course, my brother Gary and others. See, we've got a lot of history with that going between us. That's why when we say we trust us because we know us. I've had Bill Evans on the back of my motorcycle going across the Midlands. Of course, I didn't. That's not an exciting roll me away kind of a story. I thought it was going to be Tammy Evans, not Bill, when that all came up. Sorry, Bill. Okay. Beyond Mount Haleakala. You smoke four packs of cigarettes a day. I'm sitting on top of Mount Haleakala. We're going to ride these bikes 38 miles back to the ocean. And I had my cigarettes there and a very nice cigarette lighter. And right standing, right, I'm dizzy. And I'm thinking, if I get on that bike, I might go off a cliff and die. And right next to me is a good Mormon friend of mine, John Sims, and I knew I couldn't pollute him or corrupt him too much, so I gave him my cigarettes and my lighter, and I said, John, don't you give those back to me unless I beg. John Sims still has my really nice lighter. I don't know if he smoked those cigarettes or not. To run the Colorado River with my mentors, to go out on the deep, the deserts, and jeeps to Salvation Springs with Jan and Raylene and others. To lead a merry band of Canadians, on motorcycles across the Southwest. One of the more creative Canadians actually went off the north rim of the Grand Canyon. Okay? We hadn't even thought to do that. They're always leading the way. I don't know the reason for it, but this business, okay, this industry creates community faster than anything you'll ever see, except maybe, being in Mogadishu or something like that. Why? I don't know why. Maybe we all have the same pressures, same goals, like-minded. We have a culture of covering our each other's backs. All I know is already, for you that are brand new to this business, look at how many close relationships you already have. But on another subject, my mom, 95 years old, I went up to visit her in the hospital. She's got Alzheimer's really, really bad. And I went up, it was a death watch. I got a call from my sisters and brother up there, and they said, you better come. We don't think she's going to last more than a few days. And just to give you a little background, my mom, okay, when I was 11 and Gary was 12, my dad died, leaving her in charge of wilderness sporting camps back in the wilderness. There was no way to get out town, if you will. 2-day trip on the river was about it. And so I sat there, and my mom has forgotten everything. But she remembered a whole lot about that. And Gary, I wrote these things down as I was sitting by her bedside. She said, you boys needed a father so bad. Those days were so hard. I lost your father too quick. Life has its hard spots and trials. And I said, Mom, yeah, Mom, hey, do you regret any of it? She said, no, I just did what I had to do. And then she turned and looked at me and she said, now who are you again? Gladwell, in his new book, he says, facing overwhelming odds produces greatness and beauty. That's where my mom came from. See, God blessed her with the necessity. God blessed her with the necessity and not the choice. Therefore, she has left a great legacy. The problem most of us have is we've been cursed with the choice. See, we could go out, we can get a good job. We can work for the government. We can go, not even have a job, don't even have to show up for work. And get welfare checks. Or whatever it is. The choice is what's dangerous and dastardly. We have to make a conscious choice to go after the daring adventure. If we don't, we never will have it. We will let life slip by as we talked before. And I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of guy who's always had to have my butt kicked to get me to move on. It should not be that way. How many people, that's who you are. You can ride through life, but somebody comes up and hits you, knocks you down hard enough, by God, you'll get up and fight. And you know, back in 1976, I was in Presque Isle, Maine, working for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and I had a grave injustice done to me. I went from a boss that was wonderful to a boss that royally sucked. And I'll tell you right now, the difference between heaven and hell on earth is one boss away. And any of you that think that's not true, you're kidding yourself. But when I first saw this industry, I wanted freedom so bad, I went out for 3 years, and I had the eye of the tiger or whatever that thing is because I wanted freedom. I did 7 nights a week. I'd have done 8 if there was an 8th. Whatever it took, I wanted freedom. I went out and built depth, did the uncomfortable stuff until I was free. And then I took a decade and jumped in the wagon and rode. It was a good decade, but not very productive. Then I sort of got screwed again and moved on. Another 3 years, another 7 nights a week. This time we went out and developed financial independence. Never would have to work for the rest of my life. That was a cool deal. And then just recently, we were riding along. We were, Debbie mentioned, we were associated with a company that lacked principle, and we get screwed again. What hurt me more than anything was to see my own children, because we told our children this was the place to be, and we had incorporated them in our business and our hopes and our dreams in that business. And by God, I was depressed when I realized that the friends, the people that we had promised these things to, that those things were not going to come to fruition. We went that trip last year in September. We went across Northern that motorcycle trip across Northern Europe. And I'll tell you what, that was a sad trip. But a good friend of mine said, Tyler, when you get back, let's talk. He said, all those things that you and I always talk about, he said, maybe we can do something. I got back, and sure enough, I'm telling you, it came just at the right time for us. So here we go again. Back up on the hind legs, back with a spine again. I have never had as much fun as this run, because I think this run is in spite. We are going to be the largest network marketing company on the face of this earth, and that's a fact, and you can take it to the bank. All those people I talked about earlier, there's nobody in the world. If I were actually landing in Normandy and I was in a beach craft and I need somebody covering my back, I want those guys covering my back. We cover each other's backs in this business, folks. And I'm hoping that you sense that already. I'm going to beg you not to wait until you get screwed to get moving. Don't wait for you to get kicked in the butt before you get moving. I'll tell you two ways to do it. If you're a Christian, there's a book called Wild at Heart. My wife has read it at least twice. I've read that thing, I don't know, 10, 15 times. I just keep reading it over. Everything's highlighted now. It's highlighted in red and blue and black. But if you want to know a book that will get you to stand up and take action, that's it. It is Christian, okay? Now, you could do like my stepdad, the one that was in Normandy. You could do what he did. He wanted to give his daughters a book about his war effort. He was on a ship. He was on the ship when they landed troops in Sicily. That same ship was at Normandy, and that same ship went on from Normandy to Okinawa, where it was sunk by kamikaze. He gave them a book, but he was a very religious man, so he went through the book, and it scratched out all the swear words. Okay? So that his 50-year-old daughters wouldn't have to see it. Okay? So you could, if you're a heathen, you could take that book, Wild at Heart, and just go through and do the same thing. The principles are there. Another book that you add to that, take The Compound Effect. Most powerful book. People say, you know, Christians will give me a hard time. They say, what do you mean the most powerful book you've ever read in your life is The Compound Effect? Okay? And my answer is, well, you know, it's The Compound Effect, okay, or another book that's just like it, that's the book that got me to read the Bible every day. It's The Compound Effect that got me to do all of the things, all of the habits that got me where I am today. Those two books will totally change your life. And then just in random notes here, I said, I don't want to use this, but I got such a kick out of myself when I wrote it. I said, maybe. I was going to write my epitaph when I was out speaking in Ohio here a little bit ago. And I couldn't come up with a good epitaph. So instead I chose the news story, not the story of my retirement, but this is the story of my demise. And I would like it to read this way. Libby lost control of his 502-horsepower boss hog at an estimated 218 miles per hour, leaving the north rim of the Grand Canyon. Search parties have given up looking for the 133-year-old New Hampshire native. In closing, I'm just going to ask you to commit to doing something. Not someday. You've heard the whole saying, okay? There's no such thing as someday. Someday, what do they call it? That's the eighth day of the week. It never comes around. It's a fantasy. Let's be honest. Let's be candid. Either it's going to be Monday or never. How many people have set the goal of losing weight? Let's raise our hands. Okay? Just never to start. How many people have decided to make $1 million a year, but they just never started? I'm begging you, for your sake, not for mine. I'm begging you. You make this life a daring adventure, and the way you do it is you tackle this sucker, and you become free, and you become rich, and you just have the life that you always dreamed of. God bless.
This classic audio presentation was created to assist you in your personal development, furthering your leadership skills, and building a sustainable business. While no one can guarantee success, we hope that the principles discussed here will enable you to experience greater confidence and the satisfaction of genuine accomplishment. This is a copyrighted program of Common Sense Mentoring. All rights are reserved.